From Comic Book City, USA, it's Acme Cast number 234. I'm Steven.
I'm Jay.
And this is Riley.
Thank you, Jay.
This is Lord Retail, and it's like we've never done this
before. This is episode 001A.
It is so much like we've never done this before. You need to do that again. Because I had your microphone muted.
So this is how we begin a podcast, by muting one of these microphones is muted.
We're making it up as we go along. We really are. I feel like all we've been talking about lately is comics entertainment news.
That's because you control the conversation. You control what we discuss. That's why you feel that way.
Excellent. Because all I want to talk about today is the Supergirl trailer.
I have not seen it.
You're killing me. You would not like it. I can go ahead and say that you would not like it. Is that accurate, Jay?
That is accurate.
I think out of everybody at this table, I have the most background experience with Supergirl as a character.
And though. The least background with CW-style shows, yes, and Sex and the City and absolutely. Devil Wears Prada and that type of thing.
I just don't know much about it. I really don't.
Which is about, it sounds ridiculous, but it is an accurate comparison. The most accurate comparison, almost shot for shot, is the Black Widow Age of Me parody trailer from Saturday Night Live.
Seriously?
Yeah, they both work at Fashion Weekly. For real.
Isn't that insulting?
To the producers of Supergirl, probably.
Well, I think that one of the great things about the trailer was they get right out ahead of that, where they get out ahead of her being called Supergirl instead of Superwoman in these times. They get out ahead of the costume. They address all of that in the 6.5 minute trailer. There's high action. There's functionality in it. There's more Superman in the 6.5 minute trailer than there were in 10, 22 episode seasons of Smallville.
Like, I think that Supergirl has always been a very easy to understand concept, even if you don't necessarily know that she's Superman's cousin, you know, that she's related to the Superman, you know, saga of Krypton explodes, probably kryptonite weakness. You know, you instantaneously, you have at least a kernel of an idea of what is this site, you know, just by looking at the character. So it can kind of be whatever, but it's also a character they could seriously overcomplicate very quickly.
Now, why, and I'll ask this of Jay, why was it almost a knock against me? Because you guys watched it before I did, and you came in the store, and you guys were like, have you seen the Supergirl trailer? You are going to love it. We all hated it, but you are going to love it.
Well, you know, that's because people know you, and as anti-Daredevil as you were, that meant that the universe had to generate something that would capture the level of excitement you should have had for Daredevil, and it's all wrapped up in the Supergirl, I guess.
Thank you, Jay, for that answer.
I just think that, not that Daredevil wasn't elements of the character or anything like that, but it's nice, especially seeing something like Batman versus Superman, that there are people out there that are up for giving a brighter, more accurate interpretation of a character. It's okay for Supergirl to love flying. Like, whenever they talk about Jimmy Olsen in this trailer and he's like, you know, up, up and away, the city needs you. That is so much more refreshing than Pa Kent. Like, sometimes you just got to let people die.
Sometimes you just got to give up.
And that's so much more refreshing to me. And I think it's cool that even though Arrow had the success that is leading to all of these other CW and CBS and TNT shows, just because Arrow is darker, that doesn't mean that all these other shows have to be dark too. There can be an element of joy, whereas Dark Knight had so much success. So then it's like, yeah. Make Superman exactly like Dark Knight and then just make a DC universe where everything's terrible because this was successful.
So I've only seen about a minute of the trailer and... Yeah, I heard all of it, and it sounded like it was a joke at first. Yeah,
that was the problem, is Riley and I just heard it while Pete was watching it.
I thought you saw a minute of it. Did you just do something else, or what happened?
I mean, I was just at the counter, and I caught like the last half minute of it. But, I mean, the way it sounded like it was a parody of what was actually...
I thought it was a parody.
Black Widow, Age of Me.
Yeah, I thought it was a parody of that, is what I was hearing. When I saw the whole thing, I didn't think it was that bad at all. It's not... something that I necessarily am excited to watch, but I don't think it looks bad.
But I think that few people, especially at this table, have much real expectation of, well, that's not right, or they're doing that backwards. You know, there are some people that, yeah, Supergirl is their thing, and if stuff is not quote-unquote right, whatever that would be, because there's different versions of Supergirl. Silver Age, 80s version with the headband, Earth Angel, Peter David version, there's a Matrix version that was a shape-changing alien that decided to look like Supergirl and stay that way for a long time. What do you call the New 52 version? Like, kind of more no-nonsense, but also young person type of thing?
New 52 version.
She doesn't have a...
Straight-up alien.
New 52 version, she didn't have a civilian identity, does she? I haven't read the past couple. Maybe she just got one recently, I don't know.
I haven't read it since Mahmoud Asrar left around issue 20.
But during that time, she was Supergirl 24/7.
And that's why I think it's okay. I mean, would people have felt better if she was flying around on a horse? If there was a super horse in this?
There may yet be a super horse. That could be cool. I think that I don't know if you're supposed to apply the Arrow and Flash standard to that show or apply the Lois and Clark standard to this and say, oh, this is much better than Lois and Clark. I'm not kidding. Like, I don't know if that's the standard by which this is judged, because this is not the same thing as your Arrow style of hero. Even the Flash with like full-on superpowers is not really the same thing as like what the Kryptonians can be.
And we've also gotten a trailer, I think, just today for the DC Arrow Flash Definite spinoff for the CW Legends of Tomorrow, which I think is going to be airing on Thursday. So you could watch Supergirl Monday, Flash Tuesday, Arrow Wednesday, Legends of Tomorrow on Thursday.
That's too much.
Is it too much?
And Constantine on Friday. Oh.
There was a time you could watch a Law and Order every night of the week or some type of crime drama every
night of the week.
You
still can, thanks to the USA Network and TNT.
But I'm pretty sure I said on this podcast here that... with the major motion pictures doing their own version of Justice League, that TV would try to manufacture their own team somehow. This might not be Justice League, but you know what? I'm pretty sure it's Justice League.
I mean, I just finished watching the season finale of The Flash. I can't really tell. I thought last week's Arrow was the season finale, and it didn't turn out to be. Spoilers, if you care. I mean, these characters have shown up before, but you had Firestorm, Arrow, and Flash joining together to fight a villain. So it's already there. It has already happened organically without them having to say, hey, this is the Justice League. It's not like the Justice League got together and they were fighting Starro and they were like, hey, what are we going to call ourselves? Let's call ourselves the Justice League.
Do you have more excitement and stock in what seems to be forming on television versus, well, yeah, they're totally doing the Justice League in this Superman versus Batman thing. Cyborg's going to be there. Aquaman's going to be there. It's going to be the Justice League.
I mean, I've said on the show that I'm not going to go see those movies. I don't have an interest in seeing that presentation of these characters. I've said that Stephen Amell as Arrow is a better Batman than Ben Affleck is going to be, no matter how good he is in that movie.
So what are you looking at me for?
I haven't watched any of these shows. A Supergirl will be the first one that I might try and watch.
You've seen some Arrow, right?
I've seen the pilot of Arrow.
You need to see, I think that if you go back and watch Arrow, that by the end of the first season, you'll be like, okay, this was something.
Arrow, the only thing that gets really long in the tooth are the flashback sequences where they were like, he's been gone for 5 years. So every year, every episode has flashbacks to one of the years that he was gone. So like this was the third year that he's gone. So in theory, we have to put up with two more years of that.
And then the show's over.
Yeah. And just trying to force in the parallels between his life on the island or his life after he gets off the island with what's going on in the current story, that's not great. That's the parts of the show where I'm just like, oh, come on.
It was
like,
annoying at first.
I could fly through this.
But I grew to like seeing Deathstroke or whatever else they had to endure in
worse.
That place.
Yeah. Have it you seen the worse. Second season? You've seen the second season.
Yeah, I've seen
season
second season.
So. But once the third season is different. In the third season, it's worse.
Like, I was beginning to think that, okay, they're going to have to manufacture something to flashback to because it looks like we've covered everything that would have gone on. Well, yeah. So I don't know if that happens in season three.
Well, you know, it's like you said, he wasn't on the island for 5 years, but he was gone for 5 years.
That's so a little bit cover of a, all of that. That's a little bit of a stretch, but as long as it's the right stuff.
Well, it goes shown. Back to the first episode where he can speak Russian and he's got these Russian mob connections, so they got to explore all that. That didn't just happen on the island. So not to get too bogged down into the finer points of Arrow plot lines.
But yeah, I changed my mind on that. I initially was very, very anti-Arrow.
Extremely against it.
I changed my mind because I let it be its own story and not adapting any comic books. I kind of had to check all those at the door. Everything.
I mean, there's some stuff that just because I'm not 100% on DC, I mean, there's stuff in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that I have to look up. Like when Jay and I were watching and they name dropped the Griffin, I didn't pick up on that right away. But they get into some of the outsiders and things like that by the end of this season of Arrow where I didn't see it coming, but then they get to it and it looks exactly how it's supposed to look. They even name dropped Green Lantern on Flash, and I don't see why they couldn't do a Green Lantern TV show at this point. Like, the technology is there in Flash when they show him using the super speed and stuff, that I would think that they could just throw together some Lantern constructs every week.
Well, the ratings have to be there. You know, if CW is more flexible than NBC was on Constantine, yes. I don't know the rules.
I mean, Constantine was in the slot of death anyway. Yeah. Like, Fridays at 10 o'clock, that's like...
Nobody watches TV.
You're either asleep or you're out doing anything
that's
else.
Like the,
pretty much.
The Sliders Firefly time slot, where they're like, they're trying to kill it!
Let's go. We'll move it from Fridays to Sunday. That'll
how
be great.
How's Gotham doing? Anybody know?
I mean, it's already picked up for a second season, and it didn't end terribly, but it's just not there the same way. Like, there are cool elements, but
where's the Batman?
I mean, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, at the end of the first season, are we going to get Batman? No, we're never going to get Batman ever. It's like the Smallville thing. Like, that's the end of this show.
They can't drag it on for 10 years, though. The kid's going to get too old. And be like, okay, he has to become Batman pretty soon. Has to.
But bringing things back around to comics quickly for a little bit of comics at the table, I'm going to say, as excited as I was about the Supergirl trailer, I was even more excited having finished Secret Wars number 2 this week. All the complaints I had about last week about where issue 1 dropped us off, completely taken care of after reading issue 2. I haven't been this excited about a Marvel event at this point since Secret Invasion. Maybe in Siege, when at the end of issue 2, it was like Cap's shield coming down to hit Norman Osborn in the face. That was a cool moment, but overall, the promise of the whole event and everything that we have coming for us, I'm much more confident now.
The cool thing about Secret Wars is that, you know, with Siege, it was Osborn getting payback for all the running amok across the Marvel Universe. With Secret Invasion, it was like, okay, there's aliens here. What are they about to do? With Secret Wars, this is kind of coming from, you know, you turn the page, you don't know what you're about to get. It's coming, it's like fresh from out of nowhere. You know, if I hadn't read like 35 comics on Tuesday, by the time I got to Secret Wars, it was like 1:30 in the morning, so I didn't tweet anything about it until the next morning, but I sure wanted to. I thought this was amazing, outstanding. It was jam-packed. It plugged into what we were saying before as far as, I mean, how much were we really saying about this?
And let's get into it.
You know, I know how to say things without saying too much, but at the end of the first issue, when everything is gone, met with nothingness, and the last panel you see is Dr. Doom's face fading away, when at the beginning of the issue he was challenging the Beyonders. I thought that this, I don't know, it's like the whole thing just validated everything, because you had for 3 years the Avengers doing their thing and failing, and Dr. Doom kind of was on his own path. Once he got wind of what's going on, he was doing his own thing, and we saw a little bit of it, but weren't really paying attention to it. That's safe to say you were not paying attention to whatever Dr. Doom was doing. What he did was he pulled out something from nothing. Everything was gone. He pulled off something.
I think we were saying there's definite similarities in the story structure to elements of Game of Thrones. And I'm not saying Hickman was like, hey, this is what's really popular right now. But I think when you see those elements, then you're like, okay, I can see where this is going to end up. I mean, not necessarily end up, but I can see definite paths that this can take that are pretty exciting.
You know, I knew nothing about that. I was catching a little bit of Dune type of stuff, just hints, just a little teeny tiny bit of it, especially during the duel. You know, I will kill him is kind of what I was getting, but I don't know much about Game of Thrones, so.
I think it definitely shines a new light on Thor's, which we had heard was going to be really important for the storyline, but now that you find out that the Thors are the Green Lanterns, they're the enforcers, they're the police for Battleworld, that throws that into a whole new light and I think makes it a must-read.
I would agree that after you... You know, when we were asking people, okay, which Civil War book do you want? Do you want Civil War? Do you want A-Force? That was kind of noise coming at people. But when you read issue two, you have a context of like, okay, there's a book with Ultrons fighting Marvel zombies from Marvel Zombies. Okay, I do want to read that after all. You have a context for what these things were. Is it too late to ask for them? Not too late, but shops everywhere have already put in their orders, so this will be interesting.
Just reading through the issue, I thought was awesome. I mean, you didn't know what was going to happen next. You know, just the first page being all those Thors, it's just like, oh, they're getting right into it. Like that's what this is. And I mean, you had no idea what to expect with every page you turned.
And you can't tell how long has it been this way. This world that you're entering, is it an hour old? Is it 25 years old? You can't tell. But the way this issue presents itself is this is how it always and only was. No one knows any different. Except for the couple that do.
And that's where it comes in for me, saying that issue one should have been called something else. Issue two should have been issue one for the event, and the other one is like Marvel Universe, the end, or you know something else, even though they've already used that title. But issue one should have been called something else. It should have been the Illuminati Road to Civil War one shot.
Or even just Secret Wars like Prelude would have been a good name.
Or that should have been the zero issue or something, so that the expectations were not this is where the story begins, because that's really where the story of Time Runs Out. They could have called it Secret Wars Time Runs Out.
Well,
that's where that story ended.
You do that in stores. Do not order it. Yeah. You do not order it.
And
in
it keeps people from reading it. That's true.
And I think that, I agree with you in that. Your number one, which is the final battle, and it doesn't work. And then to flow directly into this like just amazing new world in issue two, normally you can't tell a story that way. Any other time, you would have had something like, okay, you read this to kind of wrap up everything, but then here is the start of your new series. And also, with issue two being the way that it was, I don't know how you deal with this in just six more comic books. I don't know. This is issue two gave too much. As far as, like, look at all of the stuff that there is that exists.
I think that there are elements of issue two that you'll never see again in the eight issues of Secret Wars, though. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if you never really see the Thors again, and you have to read Thors for that. And definitely elements like dealing with James Braddock and Brian Braddock, you're going to have to read Captain Britain and the Mighty Crusaders to get into that. And when you look in the backgrounds and you see all these characters, you're going to have to read all of these miniseries to get the rest of that. I think the core is going to be the reveal from the life raft that you get towards the end of this issue, more so than it's going to be about any of the other goings on in court.
I think you have to see the Thors again to maintain order. You know, they're the closest thing you have to, I won't say good guys, but it looks like every territory, they kind of stick to themselves. But I like the presentation of getting the idea across through somebody from a territory did something wrong that Dr. Doom didn't like, so they have to appear before everybody. Dr. Strange is the voice of law or whatever, because Dr. Doom surely doesn't talk directly to you. And you sort of get to see who all runs the different lands. Some of them are surprising and interesting. And you get to see what happens to somebody if they do something wrong.
I mean, it definitely made me want to check out more of the Battle World series that I wasn't previously interested in, just to see a little bit more into each of these territories, like the Captain Britain stuff, for example. I didn't I didn't choose. I wasn't subscribed to that.
Why like, would you care about that previously? There'd be no reason.
Yeah, but you know, after that duel and everything, I'm like, oh, well, that could be pretty cool.
There was somebody tweeted something to the effect of, I don't understand America's fascination with Captain Britain, that they will just not leave this character alone ever. And on the one hand, that's funny. On the other hand, it's absolutely true. Captain Britain gets a lot of screen time whenever possible.
My only complaint is that everything won't be drawn by Asad Ribic.
You know, the whole eight issues will
No, I'm saying, like, I wish that everything. I know that's impossible. And that's something. How much better would that be?
Can you imagine? Something that Jermaine brought up last week, that now that we're all interested and we're all excited, the burden falls to, in the case of next week, Jason Aaron and Brian Bendis and Mark Bagley and Mike Del Mundo and all the different people working on the Secret Wars Journal and Battle World anthology series. And maybe more curiously, it falls to your Mike Costas. It falls to your G. Willow Wilson's getting her first chance to really step up to the plate. She's done an awesome job on Miss Marvel. Now she gets a flagship Avengers book.
She gets all the Avengers.
Yeah. So now it falls to those people to keep that interest going, not just Asad Ribic and Jonathan Hickman, not just the other superstars that are doing stuff, but now it falls to everyone else that's been working on a title in the Marvel Universe.
I thought the two Last Days titles this week were, they all did a pretty good job. Magneto was simply, Magneto is on the scene in issue number one. He's there, and he feels that he can somehow repel another Earth. And then normally, I would think he couldn't do that, but he found the Kitty Pryde bullet from Astonishing X-Men that was across the universe and drew it back to Earth. Now, granted, he lost his powers during AVX, so I don't know if he's up to it or if he's like done something to amplify his power, but he feels that he can repel this other Earth, the ultimate Marvel Earth. Unfortunately, they have Sentinels there, so they're like, launch Sentinels at Magneto, so that's kind of where that drops off. And Cap and the Mighty Avengers was really good in that it has a lot of the conversation that we never saw. You've got your new Avengers characters who just didn't tell anybody else. You know, when they said, we, the smartest people, cannot come up with any solutions, and you guys have like an hour left to live. It was like, you know, you could have told all the rest of us, we could have come up with something. If you guys knew about this that long ago, why didn't you say something? So that was good Marvel Universe conversation.
I wonder if there'll be any, and I don't know why, this is the first time I ever thought I would say this, I wonder if there will be any frontline or embedded style stories.
What are you doing? I wish there were some type of frontline with Ben Urich, some sort of.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, where is the story about like the people living under? One of the really cool things that they started doing was all the lingo that they had already. I thought like the God doomed whatever.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, it's just doom is a part of everyday life. Like, where is the Latvarian that is living under Doom's thumb, or where is the person living in Manhattan, you know, 616 Manhattan, that is now floating over everything else?
I wasn't clear on reading this. Like, you know that Doom is the ultimate power, but did he intend for the Battle World to be exactly as it was? Because I was thinking, you can't have asked for Marvel zombies to be here. If you didn't want, if you were given an option to have a bunch of uncontrollable zombies or not have them,
it's like, well, I got this trench. What do we put in the trench?
So I couldn't,
Ultrons and zombies. Screw it.
So I couldn't tell if he was in full control or just maintaining control over what there was.
Do you guys like stories? Because I looked at the Battle World map at the back of this issue in a whole different light. I was pulling out the battle board that we were giving out next week to re-examine it. Do you guys like stories where you have to keep jumping back to a map? Like, that's something, even reading Game of Thrones or watching Game of Thrones, I like to look at a map. I like to know where the pieces are on the board. Or The Hobbit, I remember flipping back and forth to the map all the time while reading The Hobbit or reading the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But I know there are some people that are like, no, that's too complicated. That's too dry.
I assume no one is going to be walking from area to area, but I guess I don't know that for a fact.
Ben Urich, who's going to walk across all of Battleworld and report on it.
I think that every issue that you read is going to let you know where you are. It may not show you the map again. You might have to refer to the map to say, okay, if Hulks are here, then where are, you know, where do the Thors operate from again? You might want to do that. As far as have to, I wouldn't think you'd have to do that.
I definitely referred to it after I finished reading it. I was like, oh, wow, he was all the way over there? Whoa, like, all right.
And it definitely matters once they establish where the wall is and that all the Marvel zombies yeah. and the Ultrons and the Annihilation Wave are on the other side.
South of the wall.
Yeah.
I got it.
That's where we were saying it's a lot like
that's the Game of Thrones
where you have the wall and the people watchers on the wall and the White Walkers on the other side.
Yeah.
I wonder if there are some wildlings out there living amongst the zombies
probably.
And the Ultrons.
Elsa Bloodstone, that's going to be in one of those zombies or Ultron books. I can't remember which one.
I got a kick out of Mr. Sinister's zone being called Bar Sinister. That's just me. Normally, I don't like that character, but he was kind of cool in this, right?
He was okay.
They're nodding silently in agreement.
One of the,
no, I like Mr. Sinister.
Was one of the characters the god for Moon Knight, Khonshu?
I'm almost positive that was
Khonshu. Yeah, Khonshu is in the background.
But that's not with, one of the miniseries, right?
Well, Khonshu is in the company of, I don't know if that's the Panther god. I know that's Sim from X-Men Inferno there with Madeline Pryor and Sebastian Shaw and Black Queen. I assume that is Inferno where you read about that.
Okay. But I am like right now, I'm like, I want to read everything.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I'm also like, but I'm having trouble keeping up with what I'm reading now. And I know certain books are going to go away too. And maybe that perspective still hasn't hit yet. But I'm like, man, that's 7 extra books to read next week.
Like, if it hasn't hit for you, I know it hasn't hit for customers.
I feel like there were at least a half dozen people yesterday that. We were like, are you doing Secret Wars? And I talked about Riley talking to a customer last week, and they're like, no, I think I'm just going to sit this one out. I'm kind of tired of all the events, and they still don't understand that this is now the Marvel Universe. Yeah.
Like, I think that it is cool of Marvel to leave books like Squirrel Girl and Silk and Howard the Duck. There's an opportunity for if you truly do not want to do Secret Wars, if you hate alternate realities or... top to bottom, this is not what I want to read about. You can try some of these other, you know, critically acclaimed books that normally you would probably wouldn't buy Howard the Duck. You probably wouldn't buy Spider-Gwen, but it is there for you to sample because it's what there's going to be on the shelf that doesn't deal with Secret Wars.
And I don't think last week we touched on any of the previews for Divergence that are coming up in the back of the Convergence number 2 issues this week. Last week, the only one that I actually read was Prez. This week, I enjoyed more of what I saw. In the back of Aquaman was a preview of Dr. Fate by Paul Levitz and Sonny Liu. There was a Batmite preview in the back of maybe Batman Shadow of the Bat.
That's part of the problem that the covers don't say, you know, some sort of banner saying, and see all new backup story for whatever series. They don't tell you that. You know, I found myself only because I read them all. Yes, dear listeners, I read them all.
Masochist.
Yeah, it was very taxing. So did you read the books knowing that Batmite was in the back, or you said, I'm going to read these Convergence, and I have no idea what's going
to
be in the back?
As we were unpacking the boxes on Tuesday, I flipped to the back of every Convergence book to see what the preview was and took the ones that I wanted, which were Dr. Fate, Bizarro, and Batmite from this week.
A lot of them don't... They're not where you would think they would be. You would assume that Green Lantern Lost Army would be in Green Lantern Convergence. Now, that's either because they want you to check out a thing that you weren't normally going to buy. It's like, okay, I'm buying Justice League. I don't read Green Lantern. But then you do read the backup story. You say, oh, I'll read that. Or maybe they just didn't know where things were going.
Yeah, I assume that they don't know what they're doing. I assume that all the time about them.
Dr. Fate looks like it's DC's attempt, even more so than Batgirl, to have a Miss Marvel-style character where he's an Egyptian character who's in his early 20s rather than in his teens, like Kamala Khan, who gets the helmet of Naboo. And then in Bizarro, I don't care what Jermaine says, Bizarro is Jimmy Olsen and Bizarro taking a road trip to Bizarro America, a.k.a. Canada, and wreaking havoc along the way. It's that's enough for me. That plus the Gustavo Duarte artwork, I'm sold.
I mean, Bizarro, but I have a threshold for how much backwardsness, and it just wasn't quite what I was looking for.
And then Batmite is actually the first time that he's met Batman within the issue, and then he's like, man, this Batman's a jerk. Like, he needs help. I'm going to go help out all the heroes in the new 52. Just like, you know, you should be doing things more like this, and it's just going to be like Dan Jurgens critiquing the entire DC universe.
I really want it to be that, though. I really want Jurgens, who has experience with DC characters, to really sort of poke fun at some of the new origins or the ways the character behave right now. I don't know if he'd be allowed carte blanche to do whatever he wants to. I would hope so. I felt like the Lobo backup story in Green Lantern, because of that, that book should have had like a T plus on it, because it was much more graphic than the Green Lantern lead in story. It was extremely graphic.
Yeah, I don't think they were even thinking about it. It seems like right before they went to the printer, they're like, oh crap. We need to get these previews out.
Didn't somebody say, let's just put previews in the back of these books? I just shuffle them up. It'll be fine.
Like, I can't tell if this is something people will come back and ask for. Because in the example of the new Batman, you either know who the new Batman is from the free comic book new story that was there. You know about it from whichever Convergence had the detective backup story in it. Or you're going to know about it in Batman, 41?
Or from the internet.
Well, I mean, if you're reading comics and, you know, quote unquote first appearances, there's still first appearances on online. First Wikipedia entry featuring this character.
It's for the letter A.
Screenshot.
And next week, I'm looking forward to Gotham Academy, which is going to have a lead in Green Lantern Corps number 2, and Robin, Son of Batman, which is fortunately in the back of New Teen Titans number 2, which I was going to read anyway. But it looks like DC is also going to release all of these 8-page prologues the week after the books come out. So last week, the previews were released on Monday. This week's previews will be released probably sometime either next Monday or Tuesday, so that you're not penalized having to buy a $3.99 book that you don't want just to read these 8 pages. But like Jermaine said, if you do want it in print, then you do have to buy the book for now.
Some people are collectors. Like, they don't want to just, you know, have seen the story. They want to know that they got the story. I wish Dr. Fate can do well. I feel like that book's going to struggle. It's got to be, who's the creator again? Gene? No, he's not doing
it. Sonny Liu.
Okay, yes. Sonny Liu has got his fans from his independent stuff have got to show up for it, because I think that DC fans are not going to, they're not going to get the look of it. And Dr. Fate on his best day is a hard sell as a concept. Just a hard, hard sell for people.
I think a lot of Sonny Liu fans are people that would be 100% anti-superhero corporate comics, regardless of who was working on them or how much they like their previous work.
Was there a Dr. Fate angle in Constantine? Is this like a household name? People know what it is?
Did people watch Constantine?
Surely somebody DVR'd it, I think. They meant to watch it.
Dr. Fate was definitely on Smallville in the Justice Society episodes. And then the big Image release this week, even though there were several with Mantle and Mythic, the biggest one had to be Injection number 1 by Warren Ellis and Declan Shalvey. And this one was not, I guess it's what I expected from Warren Ellis. It's not what I expected Warren Ellis to write for Declan Shalvey, especially given the structure of their Moon Knight run.
Did you notice there was quite a few people that had inquired about that or emailed overnight about Injection over Mantle and Mythic? Do you think that's Warren Ellis fans resurfacing? I think the people, I'd say about 90% of the people that picked up or tried or subscribed to Injection, they don't have a history with Warren Ellis. Even with Trees on the shelf, they don't have a history with that either.
Yeah, even with Trees being on the shelf, I don't see what the draw is to Warren Ellis. Because like Trees, you don't have a ton of subscribers, but people seem to really show up, at least for the first couple issues, even if they don't stick around. And then they're there to try the new thing, but I don't think they'll stick around for this either.
I mean, I think you're diehard people. There really aren't that many, honestly. Like, because you're talking about people that read Ocean and Orbiter and Global Frequency.
Which, even Planetary's out of the conversation, unfortunately.
Those didn't light up the charts, but Warren Ellis goes back to, and the importance of what he was doing goes back to, like, the launch of The Authority. and the work that he and Brian Hitch were doing as far as decompressing comics and blowing them wide open at the turn of the century. And beyond that, I mean, you read his novels, right?
I read Gun Machine.
They're decent. And Jay and I were talking to Jason Howard last week, and he was saying Warren was trying to write his newer comics more like a novel, where it's not going to lay everything out. You might have to read 50 pages before you start to get into what it is, or in the case of comics, that would be 3 issues worth mm-hmm. before you really start getting into heavy character development and stuff. And before that, it might just be a bunch of disjointed scenes.
Yeah, but today's world, 3 issues is right at the barrier of what readers are going to, that's the extent of what they're going to give you to plead your case, 3 issues. In some cases, people give you 1 issue to plead your full case of why are we here.
That's the same argument I had about Secret Wars last week, though.
But I'm just saying that's the spread that people give. Very few people give 6 issues to see if they like something.
Well, I don't think Ellis cares. I
mean, he definitely doesn't.
So yeah. It doesn't matter. I mean, I understand your argument, but it just doesn't matter. Like, he's going to write novels now, and they're going to be comics and novels at the same time.
See, I mean, yeah, that's why I think, you know, maybe the trades will sell well, but yeah. I mean, people just aren't going to stick around. Like, I mean, Trees, I didn't stick around. I know Jay read the trade and said it was awesome.
Yeah. But I read 1 issue of Trees and I was like, I'm not doing this. Yeah, and then Steven said how good it was. And so I picked up the trade. And yeah, it's awesome. But that trade reads like, you know, the first couple of chapters of a book.
And an injection, I can't tell you what the story is. There's some kind of team called the Curses that are a division of the Ministry of Time and Measurement in the UK. They're doing something kind of paranormal, but something kind of scientific. That element of it reminded me of Nameless by Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham, also from Image. But beyond that, I can't tell you where this is going other than the main character really wanted a sandwich.
Well, you can't quite tell if they're getting the team back together or if there used to be some sort of group that served a purpose, because there's a ton of named organizations such as the Actionable Archaeology
Agency.
Yeah. So there's all these networks that exist to categorize or protect against what have you. So I don't know if they're getting the band back together, if they're introducing selected characters and saying, okay, we at least found this person, and she's in terrible shape, and she keeps asking for a sandwich, and we will get her that sandwich, but we really need for her to go check out this thing. And meanwhile, they're approaching this other guy to try to get him to come back in. He does not want to do that. I like Declan Shelby. You can't beat Jordy Belair colors, and they're a great team together. The biggest barrier here is that there is a lot of United Kingdom language and lingo and locations.
It's very British.
It's extremely British. You know, sometimes you can read a comic by a British creator and it's just set wherever it's set. But this time it is specifically set in a certain area and it speaks the language of that area.
Right down to the accents of the different characters.
Well, yeah, the accents, the lingo, and even you can tell the settings. Like, it's just... it's just all foreign. It's hard to decide.
I just had to roll with it. There came a point where I was like, okay, this is a Warren Ellis comic. It is, you know, he is from where he's from. The creative team, they're from where they're from. I'm just going to roll with it and gather the big story points of what's happening. Because you can get caught up in, wait a minute, what was that word again? I don't know what that was.
And Nimona was a new graphic novel from HarperCollins that I picked up that's actually a collection of Lumberjanes co-creator Noel Stevenson's webcomic that's really excellent so far. I haven't gotten fully into it, but it's broken up in strips, and it's a girl who wants to become the squire or sidekick of the most villainous knight in the land, and then goes on from there. And did you guys read Harrow County, Riley? That seems like it was more in your wheelhouse than mine.
Yeah, I definitely read it, and I was weary because Cullen Bunn puts out a lot of books, so I feel like he has a lot of number ones on the shelf, but I decided to give this one a go with the collaboration with Tyler Crook, and it was awesome. I was pleasantly surprised with it. It was really very creepy, but you know, it wasn't like a take the cheap route to scare you. Like, it wasn't a serial killer or anything like that. It kind of had a witch's feel, but it wasn't as confusing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's witches you can understand immediately.
Yeah, that's exactly it. If you liked kind of what you saw with witches, but you are kind of running low on patience and you're tired of not knowing what the things look like exactly, then you could read Harrow County and you absolutely get everything you need to know. You know, there was a being that was presumed to be a witch, probably was, and the townspeople, I guess, had enough at some point and destroyed the witch, and she was like, I will be back.
Yeah.
At some point, I'll be back. And there's a young girl that the people are not really sure if this is the witch come back, because we would have probably seen, we would have noticed something by now, so it's probably okay. Yeah.
There'd be some dead cows, right? Yeah. Right?
Yeah. The characters are definitely oddly charming, but you're like, oh, wait, she might be a witch. She's, she's kind of creepy.
And finally, we had the first hardcover collection of Thor by Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman come out. And this is one that I'm left scratching my head at, because I think that has number 1 through 5 in it.
Yes.
So where are 6 through 8 going to go? Because they're definitely not long enough to comprise
six through eight in annual. There you go.
Yeah, I suppose Marvel could charge $24.99 for that. But we also got the reveal of who is under the new helm, and
I want to not say who it was, but I, you know, because Marvel spoiled it. What, on Tuesday they just said, "Here's what is coming to shelves." When, you know, Jason Aaron had worked so hard to keep it a pretty, I won't say airtight mystery, but you didn't know who it could be. Thor had a list of characters, you had a list of characters, and you just didn't know what it was going to be.
I didn't know Marvel put it out there. I figured it was just a bleeding cool thing.
No, Marvel did a press release themselves.
That kind of makes me mad.
Since the death of Captain America, anything cool, Marvel has ruined.
Yeah. Well, it's also, they do that so that people will do something about it. So that people will go to the store and buy it. That's why they feel they do
That's
it.
Not
so that people
case.
Will walk in, announce loudly to a room full of people what happened.
Yeah, that almost never happens, but that did happen on Wednesday. That was not cool. I had to verbally reprimand
somebody. Regulate.
I'll tell you, if he'd done that in the wrong room, it was mostly DC readers. So they for the most part weren't affected. But if he did that in the wrong room, I could not have protected the guy. I couldn't. I thought that the whole series, issue 1 to the current issue, was masterfully done. Beautiful artwork. The color was there. This is, because I wasn't really with Jason Aaron Thor. You guys know that. I was like, this is not my time to be with Thor. My time to be with Thor is over, and I'm going to read other stuff now. But I really enjoyed it, like top to bottom. I thought it was great.
Combination between reading that straight into Secret Wars 2, that's a lot of good comic pages.
I think you have to do it that way. You have to be in the Thor zone, and then you read Secret Wars number 2. Because if Thor isn't your thing, there's a lot of Thor coming at you in Secret Wars 2. There is. But if you're in that right zone, you read Thor number 8 first, go into Secret Wars issue number 2. It's all the right stuff happening. Thor is exactly who it needed to be. There was a person I had in mind who it needed to be. It didn't have to be that. Probably shouldn't have been that. But I'm like, okay, I'm all on board.
I don't love the circumstances, but I guess we'll see. I mean, we don't know where anything is coming out the other side of Secret Wars right now. No, we don't even see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're just getting into it, and we don't know.
I like that. I like not knowing where it's headed.
Presumably, if you've read, the thinking is certainly the Avengers Free Comic Book Day issue and possibly Rage of Ultron are on the other side of Secret Wars. Possibly. There could be other comics we've read and just don't know it.
Okay.
I kind of think that's possible, that everything that isn't getting taken over by Secret Wars was already after Secret Wars.
That could be so. There's nothing in the Silk series or Howard the Duck that specifically has to be.
Well, I think Silk, especially this week, the status of the Fantastic Four, where they're wearing the black and blue uniforms as opposed to the red and black ones that they wore in the James Robinson, and everything seems to be fine. The thing's not in jail. The kids are there and stuff. That either says this either happened a while ago or a while from now.
Yeah.
Come on, Riley, along those lines.
Along those lines.
Get along those lines.
Well, I mean, I was just kind of curious with the all new Avengers, this Free Comic Book Day book, with all new Avengers just kind of, that has to be after. That can't be.
You've got your new team. Yeah. You don't know who is in the Iron Man armor. You can assume it's Tony Stark and everything is fine.
I mean, they've done that before. That Free Comic Book Day book from 2007 with Spider-Man took place after After one more day, during Brand New Day. Yeah. And there were things in there where you're like, why is Mary Jane wearing this stupid costume calling herself Jackpot?
That's where you saw Overdrive for the first time, the guy that can control cars from Superior Foes.
So, yeah, that most likely is afterwards. And I think some of the other stuff probably is, too.
We owe you guys a previews episode for this month since the run-up to Free Comic Book Day and Avengers fell when we would normally do one, and then we were doing recaps for Free Comic Book Day and more detailed Avengers thoughts last week. So we're going to have to do some broad strokes for time. But right there on the cover, we have We Stand on Guard by Brian K. Vaughan and artist Steve Scrosi for Image Comics. And just by saying, this is the first new Brian K. Vaughan comic in print since Saga should be enough.
Yeah, we were discussing earlier, it's like, well, you know, is this going to work? Is this going to connect with people? But I think simply saying this is the new Brian K. Vaughan, that will motivate some people. There are some people that remember the name of Steve Scrosi, I guess is how you pronounce it, because he was a big deal for a short period of time at Marvel. Then he went over to do Doc Frankenstein. Then he went into the world of storyboarding movies like The Matrix and whatnot. Like, he left comics to do, you know, paying work. And there are people that remember him that will come back. And there's some customers, you say, it's about the United States versus Canada with robots. Then, yeah, they're there.
And that does sound simple enough. But the other thing, and this is getting into more of the behind-the-scenes stuff that people want, there are no ordering incentives for this book. And by that, I mean there is no order this many copies or this percentage of copies compared to something else. Get an additional discount. Get returnability. Get a variant cover. Unlock this other cover. There is none of that. So you're just kind of flying blind. Like, this is a case where we can look at Saga and look at how well we've ever done with it and our highest selling issues and try and hope for the best from that point. But there is no expectation by the publisher or by Brian K. Vaughan to get you to do this.
On the one hand, I understand that if you were a creator, you're a publisher, you should be like, we shouldn't have to like put bells and whistles on this new thing to get people to invest in copies so they can sell copies. But then, yeah, if you, it never hurts anything if you do have some incentives if you invest heavily in it. It's like, okay, we're going to throw in behind this thing. Then, yeah, you get an extra discount or you unlock some variant covers, limited edition stuff. So I kind of get it. I get both sides of it.
I don't know what success Image has had with those kinds of things, but I feel like their biggest successes have always come when there is especially the returnability incentive on something. When stores don't have to worry about how many they're ordering, they're not going to be hung with copies. And then if they sell 30 of the copies out of 100 that they got, well, that one didn't work out so well. But when response is higher than they ever anticipated, like on a book like Wicked and Divine, or the main one I think of with that is Sex Criminals. I don't think there's any way we would have ordered over 100 copies of Sex Criminals, but we never would have found the huge ceiling that we did if we didn't have those copies on hand.
It's like, say, we can sell 10 copies of this thing. Let's maybe carry 15 copies or 12 copies, and you still have it in a couple hours. And maybe you can't get more for 2 weeks, or it sells out everywhere. You have to wait a month and a half for reprints. But if there is a returnability aspect, you can say, all right, we're going to throw in with, like, I don't know, 100 copies. That's crazy, right? And you were able to sell 90 copies, able to sell 100 copies, and 10 more people said they would have got it too. That's the only way you would have known that. Now, the hard part is figuring out what really needs to happen on issue 2, 3, 4.
Well, that's what I was going to say next, because, for example, if we ordered 50% of what we did on Batman number 31 on all of the new number ones for Divergence, then those titles are eventually 100% returnable for us. So we did that. On the issue twos, there is no incentive like that. There's not a scaled incentive like order this many of this book and, you know, half your order will be returnable. There's nothing. The net is just gone. It's like, all right, you did a great job swinging on the trapeze this time. Now do it without the net.
Translation is that before Bizarro number one hits the shelf and we kind of know how people are reacting, we have to know exactly what we're doing when we spend our money on issue two, when it hasn't hit the shelf, when one hasn't hit the shelf yet.
Exactly. And the other side of that is IDW, where we did maybe 25 copies on Gem and the Holograms 1, and your natural reaction on every title is, all right, pull back. But IDW said, order exactly what you did on Gem and the Holograms number 1, and Gem and the Holograms 2 will become returnable. And that allowed us to have enough copies. When Gem number 1 was a success, that allowed us to already have orders in place and a good place for number 2.
Well, yeah, we kind of burn up your clock here. It's spending too much time on returnability issues.
That's part of talking about previews. That's part of it.
Folks want to hear about the comics.
No, they
don't. What's going to be good?
Oh, man.
No, people want to hear behind-the-scenes stuff. That's why I listen to this particular show, because nobody else talks about things like that. You want to know like what's good to read, listen to any.
Another one that jumps out at me, but I'm not sure exactly what to do on it, is Onyx number 1 from IDW. This is written by Chris Ryle, who's the publisher of IDW, and it's drawn by Gabriel Rodriguez, who we all know and love from Lock and Key, but just a non-Marvel and DC superhero story that's not all about blood and guts or a superhero pastiche or homage. Normally doesn't hit home too well.
It's like female ROM. That's what it looks like.
I think that we here are able to say this is a new Gabriel Rodriguez book, and some people will respond. It may not be that way everywhere, but I think there is, through Lock and Key, enough of a name built up that we can't say that, and that's all we need to say for some people.
And also from IDW, a book that I'm sure a lot of people have taken off of their list is Godzilla Half Century War, which was written and drawn by James Stokoe from 2 years ago now, 2.5 years ago. But Stokoe is coming back for Godzilla in Hell. And if for no other reason than the art, this is something that you must have. So if you enjoyed Half Century War, but you took it off your list because you thought, well, this is over and will never happen again, go ahead and add Godzilla in Hell as well. And IDW are doing an entire line of really cool EC inspired covers that I would say in almost all cases, 90% of all cases, look better than the regular cover on the book.
I think these work even if you're not familiar with what EC comics look like. It just works.
Something that I don't think is going to hit home from this catalog is DC's line of Teen Titans Go covers that are done by the likes of Craig Russo, Ben Caldwell, and Dan Hipp. And I think like the Scribblenauts covers and like the Lego Batman covers that they've done in the past, it's not that kids are going to think like this is exactly what they want, but especially Teen Titans Go as opposed to Teen Titans of the early 2000s, it's more of a kid's show, and kids are
straight up kid show.
Yeah,
straight up a kid show.
Kids are not going to come in to buy. Jermaine's looking at New Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I just happened to open up a random DC page, and for New Suicide Squad number 10, rated T+++, there is sure enough a Teen Titans Go variant cover with Raven arm wrestling with Black Hand while everybody watches on. I think that Suicide Squad readers are not going to want this the way they want other variants. I would almost not carry these.
Well, I did highlight a few that I think people will not have a problem with, but I think the Superman variant is good that we have here, where he's picking out all of his historical outfits.
It does look cool, I guess.
The Action Comics one where Superman is having coffee with Doomsday.
That does look kind of cool. I think that we would need to be very selective with these, specifically the New Suicide Squad. I wouldn't.
Batman with Jim Gordon and Batman having coffee while all the villains are behind him. That's a good one.
Who's that by?
Dan Hipp, who's the art director for Teen Titans Go. And on Detective Comics, where it's all the Robins on a Batman head, all the different Robins, including Carrie Kelly and others from TV shows.
Do you think that on the heels of Darwin Cook month and movie tribute cover month and Joker month and Harley Quinn month, this doesn't seem on par with that theme that they've been kind of knocking it out of the park on these alternate covers. Order all you want covers.
I feel like they're running out of ideas.
Yeah. Eventually we'll get, WB covers and everything's going to look like a WB TV show.
Nothing against
I think that's a good idea.
Nothing against people that make Teen Titans, but it's just, I wouldn't feel comfortable putting that cover out on the shelf with knowing that Suicide Squad is on the inside. It's like with the Lego covers. People genuinely thought, oh, they make Lego comics featuring this character cover to cover. Awesome. They pick it up. It's not that.
And I don't see them being huge hits, which is why I said I think the EC ones work a lot better.
Oh, yeah,
like, definitely. None of the EC ones are like, what are some of the terrible things? Like the injection covers, isn't that what they would say on EC comics, where it's like somebody getting stabbed with a needle and
not the eye.
There is no EC cover on par with that.
Yeah.
And even though it's not in previews, we're going to take a few minutes to sidetrack to a new book with a July 2015 item code, at least, which is The Restock of the Incal by Alejandro Jodorowsky and Muebius.
Take it away, fellas.
This version of the book is about 2 or 3 years old, I think, but was out of print for the last, I'm not sure how many months, at least the last 3 months, probably about a year it's been out of print, close to. And it is the only thing that's like a true story that you can get with Muebius artwork that is translated in English that you can get in a current volume now. There's nothing else. Right, Riley? Like everything else we've tried to find.
Oh, as far as like a full story that's not just like basically a single issue. Yeah, that's all you got.
You guys have been on a full tear to find as much of this stuff as you can. What's that movie where there's like a map on the back of the Constitution? That's what you guys are doing.
National Treasure.
I resent that.
That's what you guys are doing to find more material.
Riley would be the Nicolas Cage in that scenario.
That's messed up.
What does that make me? I don't even know who was in that movie. I can't remember. I guess this started when I read Meta Barons, and Riley was like, oh, yeah, I have Incal, which is also by Jodorowsky. Read that. Yeah,
I was like, I just picked it up because the Muebius artwork, like, flipped through it. I was like, oh, this is pretty, and then just didn't read it. because of Jay reading Meta Barons, which he talked about, and then, started this whole thing, I was like, oh, maybe we should check these out. Now, anything with Jodorowsky's name on it, we've been trying to track down and read, and I can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And anything... Any curiosity that you guys have to try this or any intense excitement that you have for this coming back into print, you guys are lucky because Jay and Riley have done the research on this. They know what printings, they know what order things were published in and what order to read things in, because even when they first started, they were like, do you really read before the Incal? Before the Incal? Is that the way it was meant to happen?
I feel like I would have been more open to... There's a point where I was reading a better variety of things. Like, I don't branch out that much anymore. I know that. But I would have been more open to...
Unbelievable.
Just discovering something.
Just admitted a weakness. I can't believe it.
I know. And I think it comes from reading so many books on Tuesday that, I barely got to read the Batman Earth 2 graphic novel, Volume 2, which I thought was much better than the first one. That was really, really good.
We're talking about the Incal, Jermaine.
I'm just saying, there was a point where, I would have branched out to, read something not in my wheelhouse. That's
can't possibly do that now. That would be impossible at this point in life to try something new or different.
I'll just let you guys do it.
Well, and
I'll let you guys do the footwork and tell me about it.
Jermaine thinks it's going to be like so, outlandish and different, but... This, I guess just because it was like a European comic, I was like, man, this is going to be like some over the top, like just something that I can't quite comprehend.
Be crazy,
like Grant Morrison.
How are the panel layouts? Sometimes European comics can have a panel layout and a font size that
there are occasions where I had trouble following where the next word balloon I was supposed to read, I'd read the wrong one. I've had that happen multiple times with Jodorowsky, but now that I'm aware of it.
Well, sometimes they'll give you little arrows.
Yeah, there are arrows sometimes to point. But it's fairly traditional. I mean, for what we're used to now, I'd say the layouts are traditional. Not for the time period, probably.
Well, that's what I meant. Sometimes it's too traditional. Do you get like splash pages, like double pages?
Oh, yeah,
or
definitely.
Okay, I thought it would just be like the...
Especially
grid,
in Metabarons.
Basic grid.
Crazy splashes in Metabarons.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you've heard about this Muebius guy and want to check out his artwork especially, I mean...
Say it right.
Muebius.
Say it right.
Muebius.
Probably.
We say that because of the, what's the documentary, Dune thing?
The Jodorowsky Dune documentary, but there's like a person or two that call him Muebius, and then other people call him Mobius. So I'm convinced it's... So I just think it depends on your accent.
If the man himself says it that way, you know.
Bro, I mean, for all I know, I could say it's Mobius. Like,
man, check out that new Mobius book. That stuff's so good, man. Yeah,
so I'm going to stick with Mobius because I just feel
feel less.
Or as some people say, Morbius, the living vampire. Not even kidding.
But
y'all got that Armory Wars.
I feel like the definitive Mobius works that people always talk about are the Incal, which you can totally get.
Yeah.
And Airtight Garage, which I read that. And that is insane. Like, you see Alejandro Jodorowsky in the Jodorowsky's Dune documentary, and you're like, man, this dude is out there. But then you figure out reading the Incal and reading Airtight Garage, like, oh, this crazy person was there to keep Mobius in check.
Yeah.
Well,
left to his own devices, Mobius is just gone. It's
prior
just
to the humanoid stuff, just going through proper channels in America, what did you really have a chance to see? Like, I think you could do Blueberry at one point, and you could do Airtight Garage from Dark Horse.
Yeah, right? Dark Horse did a line that was like the complete works that I think was 8 volumes total. Yeah. And one of those volumes was Airtight Garage.
And Airtight Garage was printed in comic book form by Epic. And
that
Epic
was Dark Horse, right?
Mm-mm.
I thought Epic was part of Dark Horse.
No, they were part of Marvel.
It predates Dark Horse.
Yeah. So Epic had it first, and then Dark Horse had the Jodorowsky stuff and the Mobius. Well, yeah, the Mobius stuff. But now the only place you can get anything is humanoids, and the only thing Mobius they have is Incal. So we're still...
Well,
Eyes of the Cat.
Yeah.
Which almost doesn't count.
You guys should have loved Silver Surfer 11 then.
Yeah, Silver Surfer 11, I was just going to say, because I texted you guys the picture, because I don't think you were reading it. The universe was called the Gerard Expanse, like,
and the
Jean Gerard, the true name of Mobius.
And the characters that they were up against, because the Surfer's, you know, leading a whole massive amount of planetary refugees, trying to find some place for him to be. And they sort of invade someone else's space, and those characters look like the pterodactyl riders, basically. And the whole story kind of runs on a Mobius strip, where it's like it folds in on itself. There's a point where you have to reverse how you're reading the book. It was a pretty good love letter to all that stuff.
Is that getting a second printing? Do you know?
I don't see why
it
would.
Or is it still available?
I hope it's still available. I think that a lot of people that would have enjoyed that one issue and the way it worked didn't see it.
I grabbed it. I haven't read it yet. I looked at it. I'm definitely going to read it.
It was a lot of fun. And even if you don't know anything about Mobius content, you still have fun with it.
Now I think some of us have to get ready to go see Mad Max Fury Road. And some of us have to go and get ready to mow a lawn. But
I got to go to work.
But in the meantime, you can find us online at facebook.com/AcmeGreensboro, on Tumblr at acmecomics.tumblr.com, which I'll go ahead and say that's my preferred way for everyone to see all of our content. That has everything that we do on every given week, this week's comics, the Acme email update, the employee picks for upcoming events. Like, we just finished up Secret Wars, and next week we're going to start on Divergence, where Jay, Riley, Pete, and Austin talk about the top 5 titles they're most looking forward to and why.
What are your top Divergence picks, Riley?
Don't spoil it. Make people tune in to the portal of your
choice. I'm just making sure he picks some.
Secret Wars.
Thursday, we have the Acme First Look, which is now up to 393 posts or weeks in a row, in other terms, as of today. And then on Friday, of course, this very program, although more recently it's been Sundays. But you get the gist. I just think it looks better on there than it does on our very own website.
You can't control what portals they use. Nature finds a way, you know?
Sometimes people might like to use Twitter, where we are at Acme Comics.
They've forgotten their own format.
You can find me on Twitter at Riley Till.
Yeah, I got a Twitter, right?
Or Instagram.
It's there, at JREwing1979. More active on Instagram currently.
Same username.
Same username, yes.
Or you can be found at Shop Acme Comics.
I can be found at Shop Acme.
If people
want
to correspond with you.
Yeah, you can send me an email at shopacmecomics@gmail.com, because I would love nothing more than to get random emails. That really sets my heart afire.
Sometimes everybody loves getting mail, right?
I like it when the voice says, "You've got mail." I've got it to still to say that, by the way.
You can find me on...
Verizon just bought Time Warner. They're trying to. Or AOL. There you what? Go. Verizon's buying AOL.
Like AOL still speak? Exists?
Yeah.
People still use AOL, don't they?
There's a lot of data just sitting around in there.
Start putting out those CDs again.
A lot of that'd cached... A lot of cached instant messages.
A lot of news.
If they're ever find, I am ruined.
A lot of news groups, too, hanging out, just waiting to be unearthed. It's like a time capsule.
I was a Prodigy guy, so I never really used AOL.
You can find me on Twitter, at Lord Retail. There was an interview I did for The Beat this week that went up. People seemed to think it was pretty good. I did it pretty late at night, so I don't remember exactly what I said, but I'm told it was nothing crazy, and people seemed to think it was all right. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
And you can find out about our upcoming convention appearances, which at this point is only Heroes Con, June 19th through the 21st, by going to our website at acmecomics.com. And you can hear this episode as well as all the other episodes streaming from the Acme Wave Projector, including, I believe, yes, this will be going up on the 15th, which means there's a new Stuff Said with Greg Scheel with guest Erica Henderson.
What?
At our website at acmewaveprojector.com. Acme!